Welcome to Financially Savvy in 20 Minutes, a podcast hosted by me, Natalie Torres-Haddad, an international award-winning author, two-time TEDx speaker, and investor, along with Vera Egli, an investor, sales and marketing pro, and multi-language podcaster. We will share the tips and tricks from interviews with self-made entrepreneurs, leaders, and those who have attained financial freedom while learning financial literacy in multiple languages. Welcome, welcome to Financially Savvy in 20 Minutes. I'm Natalie Torres-Haddad, and I'm here with Vera Egli. Hello.
Hi.
And today's topic is obviously near and dear to my heart because I have probably one of the most special guests. No offense to my others. but this one, he happens to be my blood relative as well, my younger sibling. And amazing what he's been doing. But he's going to tell you all about his investing journey and what he's been going through. Especially seeing the change in the market and what has been happening during a pandemic. And I think it's just kind of funny when I tell people, I'm like, well, I've known him my whole life. Of course, he's my brother. And so it's kind of great to see people go through different journeys. And that's what this podcast is about, is just kind of being able to share our mistakes, our triumphs, and just kind of what we do to learn a little bit more about money every day. So welcome, Danny Torres.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate you guys.
So we're going to just start off with the first question. And it's, do you remember the first time that you got paid a check that was just like made you look differently about entrepreneurship, or just made you think like, wow, this is a game changer?
Yeah. It was for $186,000 all in one day, December 31st, 2016. And never having that amount of money in one time, I didn't feel like I was going to keep it. I felt like it was going to be taken away. The first thing I did was I got to find properties and invest. And at the time, I was already a financial advisor for 3 years. So I knew about investing and where to park it. But prior to that, I was a loan officer for 7 years. So I also knew real estate and Wall Street were where I was going to park it. And I decided to park it in real estate. So I bought two multi-units with that, two duplexes in South Central LA. I rehabbed them and had them rent ready. So again, just for that fear of not knowing whether I was going to be able to keep that money or not, I wanted to park it right away and have it invested. So it was a good move on both properties. You know, year to date, I've made minimum 45% return on my investment year on year. So it was a good investment.
I love that. And
that's cool.
And you had the, I think the greatest thing that you just said is just kind of like, you knew you needed to put it into somewhere. And I think a lot of people automatically want to spend it on something like luxurious and not necessarily reinvest it. I felt the same way the first time. I'm like, oh, I got to make sure I put it back into something that is going to eventually make more money for you as well. So those very smart moves. And for you, obviously, can you share with people kind of like some of the worries that you had? Because I know a lot of people, that's a major question I'm getting all the time is it time to invest? You know, is the market ever going to change? It's depending where you are in the country listening to this. Obviously, if you're in the East Coast or West Coast, it's pricier than most. But things that you learned that obviously staying true, depending if the market does change.
Yeah, there's over 300 real estate markets in the United States, right? It's not like the Wall Street, the Dow Jones or the NASDAQ, where, you know, it's down 45 points and everyone's, you know, portfolio drops. It's not like that at all. It's more so pockets, right? Some pockets near the coastal lines will hold value, if not appreciate. More inland will probably go down depending on, you know, job demand in that area, right? If it's not so demanding, they're probably going to get hit first. So as far as investing, it's always a good time to invest. It's just where are you going to invest? If you're going to invest in a place that's on the up and coming and you've done your research, then you should be good to go. You make your money on your buy. So just right now, I was looking at a property in West Palm Beach, Florida to purchase. It needs some work. They're selling it for $250. So right off the bat, I said, wow, that's a good price for $250. I was thinking it's, you know, we can fix it up and have it after repair value of 400,000. So I look at the, you know what, this property at max, I should only be paying 220 for it. So even though 250 is a good price when it should be, you know, at 400,000 after everything, it's not a good buy. So it's always a good time to continue to buy. If you can buy one property a year, once you get to that level of buying a property every year, that's a good strategy. However, you make your money on your buy. And that's the biggest misconception that a lot of people have with Wall Street and real estate. If you're buying at the peak of the market, I mean, there's nowhere else to go but down. So that's where people lose their shirt and say, oh, this maybe investing really isn't for me. I lost money. I thought I was going to make money. People, you know, as long as you're doing the research before, that's how you'll be just fine.
I feel like I have 5 questions.
Sure. So
first off, I mean, I think we're what, 2-3 minutes into the podcast and already so much information that is going to like kind of do some mind blowing things to people. Because one of the things you said is, what'd you say, over 300 real estate markets?
Yeah, there's over 300 real estate markets in the United States.
Right. And that is so critical to remember, or to even, if you never knew, to understand that that exists. Because I think most first-time investors in real estate, they don't look at the big picture because you're so excited and wrapped up. And maybe you watch some YouTube videos and all of a sudden you're like, okay, I'm ready to roll, right? So right. How did you get to a point, question number one, how did you get to a point where you, where did you start with your research first, and how are you basically so fearless in the way that you approach investment now because of that?
That's a good question. That's a 2-part question. So to answer where I got started, I was doing a non-paid internship in a commercial real estate company with Marcus & Millichap. The market was 2007, 2008, right before the crash. And I got really good advice from the broker I was working for at the time. And he said, Danny, if you want to stay in this game, you should probably move towards the refinancing of primary residences and residential real estate instead of commercial. It'll give you a better understanding of the numbers, of where the markets are going, just to be better prepared. So you can't predict the market, but you can make an educated guess. And based on policies that are being put in place in different cities and counties and states, you'll be able to, I guess, project what's to come. So how did I get started? I listened to the broker or my mentor at the time, one of my coaches, who told me to learn more about the financing aspect of real estate. Finance aspect of real estate is the numbers, right? So that was the first part. And what was your second part question?
If that research is what makes you become more fearless in terms of your investments, does it remove layers that a lot of first-time investors might have? And then I'm going to add to that, did your sister make any mishaps that perhaps you learned from?
Great. Now, if anything, I learned a lot from my sister, which was buy low, sell high. So her first, so let's go back to that story. She bought a property at an amazing discount. And she encouraged me to buy with her. So she actually gave me some money to park in my bank account so that way I could qualify for my first loan. Unfortunately, I was still a college student, not making enough money to qualify for a bank loan. So that ended up not working out. But that got my wheels going. So truthfully, Natalie did get the brain fluid, brain juices going for buying at a discount property, searching for discounted properties. Once I find a discounted property, I run the numbers, it looks good, I need to hear from multiple perspectives, something that I'm not looking at. No matter how experienced or confident or fearless I can be, I am humble enough to realize that I don't know all the answers, and that's okay. We don't need to know all the answers, but as long as we have people that we're approaching that are more experienced than us, that have had that experience, then it just simplifies everything. So for every purchase that I make, I'm speaking with experts that have done what I've done, and I've shown them the numbers, and they'll give me the green light, or they'll give me the red light and tell me, you know, you got to go back to the drawing board. But going back to, you know, my first investment or just getting started with that conversation, I believe I applied for a loan back in 2011, got denied, and then applied again in 2013, and got denied. And every time I got denied, I took it as a learning lesson to, okay, this is what I have to do different. And let me come back, let me go to the back to the drawing board, and then approach it when the time is right. So I waited 2 years. I just wanted to check in to see where I was. I wasn't ready again. So then I waited another 2 years. So by the time I felt like I was ready to purchase, to the time I actually was able to purchase was 4 years, going on almost five, because of just time to fix things. One of the things I do now is help people along that way. So whenever they tell me they want to do this, depending on their situation, if they're right there, I try to speed up that that 4 year time frame to 6 months to a year and a half. So usually people that I'm speaking with that have no idea where to get started, I'm usually getting them ready, and it takes about 6 months to 18 months before they're ready to pull the trigger and purchase a property.
I like how you mentioned that it does take a journey. It takes multiple rejects, and it takes multiple, you know, years of just trying to figure out where you're going to invest, how you're going to hone on it. And I've seen you, I mean, do it from everything, you like, not just rehabbing a place, but moving into it for a short term until you find a, you know, someone to lease it out, and then having a system in place, which I think makes the difference for those investment that come along. And I know a lot of our listeners are like, just they're iffy about whether do they start, or, you know, or they feel rejected, and then they are rejected and say, you know, it's not for me, or I guess it's not meant to be. And you obviously went through that route where it's like, well, you have to just keep trying and learning. You've always been really open about that with, like you said, you seek out to a lot of people, and you also work with a lot of people that are dealing with foreclosures. And that's something Barry and I've been talking about a lot in the last few episodes, because we have seen the increase, right? And depending what market you're in, you're listening to. And I think that's something great, that it's wonderful that you can do it in both languages. Is there certain signs, that I call them symptoms, that you notice when there's a distressed property?
Yeah. You know, it's usually they're missing their mortgage payment for over 3 months consecutively, or just any which order, but they've had at least three missed payments on their mortgage, and now it's become public record where the bank has notified them a notice of default saying, you know, if you don't pay the arrears, we're going to move it to a notice of trustee sale, which means it's going to go to auction. So that's usually what we're looking at. And we come with a heart of service where we want to, and we, I mean, my wife, Jessica, and I, we want to help that homeowner. My wife's mother experienced foreclosure. So they lived in their car for 3 months when they got kicked out of their home. Sheriffs came, locked the house, and they lived in their car for about 3 months until they found a studio apartment. And it was my mother-in-law, my wife, and her two young brothers. So, you know, that encouraged us to make sure we can help people that are in the same situation to make sure that never happens again. And if there's a possibility that they can save the home, we're going to help them save their home, whether that's through a loan modification, negotiating with the bank, seeing if there's any assets they could liquidate to catch up the arrears, just try to do something for them. I would say 8 out of 10 people we can help out, but then there's those 2 out of those 10 where they realize they just can't make the ends meet, and you know what they once could pay for, they can no longer pay for, whether that's because there was a loss of income, a divorce, so now there's half of the money coming in to pay for the house, just a number of things. There's probably a finite number of things, maybe, you know, death, divorce, sickness, unemployment, just a few things like that, medical bills. And so our first intention is to save the property, help them save their property. And if we can't save their property, then at that point, we'd like to help them sell the property, and we'll buy it. We'll buy it cash, rehab it, get it fixed up and ready to go. And analyzing the numbers, if there's enough meat on the bone, you could say. If there isn't, we're going to wholesale it. If there is, we might fix and flip it. But if there's enough meat on the bone, then we're going to keep it as a rental. So we're going to fix it up and just keep it as a cash flow into our portfolio.
Well, I think we are going to need to do some follow-up episodes, one on the process of potentially being able to save your property. Mm-hmm. And then also on the cost of evictions, because it's one thing to get kicked out, but you still owe money, right? And then it just keeps piling up. So thanks for sharing all of that. That's really, really important for our listeners to hear, especially first-time investors. There's so much to it. Or anyone that's in that predicament now, right? Are there any books that you might be able to recommend for first-time investors, or, you know, investors in general? And also, if somebody wanted to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
Sure. I personally love all the books from Bigger Pockets. You know, it's just a big help. They simplify if you want to get into real estate investing. The one book that sticks out to me, it's called Long Distance Investing. And it's the book cover is just some big binoculars saying, you know, long distance investing made simple. And the concept of that book is just saying that, you know, with technology now, we can, you know, we have Google Street View, and we can see the street, and we can see the comps, and we can make phone calls from people out of state. And as long as you have the right team in place, like boots on the ground, what do you need? You need a handyman, a repairman, or whatever. You need a property manager, and maybe a realtor to help you find that property, right? So that's kind of the gist of the book. And after reading that book, I realized, wow, I do have those tools in multiple states. So right now we're making offers in multiple states with the intention to continue to buy here in California. And how people can reach us. We're on every social media platform as well. So, but most likely I would say, through my email, DannyTorres929@gmail.com. And we can just start it from there.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And we'll put all this information as far as the books and how you can connect on our show notes. Thank you so much, Danny, for being a part of this. And like Vera said, we're going to have you back because there is a lot. And if you have any questions listening out there, obviously let us know so that we make sure we cover that on our next episode. So see you all, and thanks for being a part of it.
Thank you. And please make sure to subscribe and leave your comments and reviews. To learn more about the podcast, check out the website and Instagram, Financially Savvy in 20 Minutes, and watch interviews on YouTube and IGTV. To become a sponsor or hire us for your next workshop or speaking engagement, please visit financiallysavvyin20minutes.com. All it takes is 20 minutes daily to become financially savvy. Music by Nikki and produced by Robert DeLude.